Yes, and to the President. Two requirements that may seem almost contradictory in tone, but which must be reconciled and fulfilled if we are to meet this national peril. I refer first to the need for far greater public information, and second, to the need for far greater official secrecy. The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society, and we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control. And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know. But I do ask, every publisher, every editor, and every newsman in the nation to re-examine his own standards and to recognize the nature of our country's peril. In time of war, the government and the press have customarily joined in an effort based largely on self-discipline to prevent unauthorized disclosures to the enemy. In times of clear and present danger, the courts have held that even the privileged rights of the First Amendment must yield to the public's need for national security. Today, no war has been declared. And however fierce the struggle may be, it may never be declared in the traditional fashion. Our way of life is under attack. Those who make themselves our enemy are advancing around the globe. The survival of our friends is in danger. And yet no war has been declared. No borders have been crossed by marching troops. No missiles have been fired. If the press is awaiting a declaration of war, before it imposes the self-discipline of combat conditions, then I can only say that no war ever posed a greater threat to our security. If you are awaiting a finding of clear and present danger, then I can only say that the danger has never been more clear, and its presence has never been more imminent. It requires a change in outlook, a change in tactics, a change in missions by the government, by the people, by every businessman or labor leader, and by every newspaper. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, no secret is revealed. It conducts the Cold War in short, with a wartime discipline no democracy would ever hope or wish to match. Nevertheless, every democracy...
Was Was that a crystal ball he was looking into? You listen to some of those sound bites and, you know, we conclude on the Cold War and people say, oh, yeah, that's who he's – I mean, he's focused on that. Sure, but who was conducting the Cold War? Again, go read Anthony Sutton's work and not quite what we're led to believe. So that's what we're talking about right there. And it's – again, it's, you know, it's not just the – low-level familial turf wars of the old days from the old country. Now, you know, it's Las Vegas. It's gone corporate. It's gone multinational. It's gone legit. Been laundered and sanitized over and over. And the efforts to sanitize through laundering, you know, some people see it. They try to bring it to light. Folks like Daphne Caruana Galizia, and, you know, the next thing you know, we all forget again. So I mentioned they thought they were free, Milton Mayer, that excerpt. Bastiat told us, you know, the guy who wrote The State is the Great Fiction through which everyone endeavors to live at the expense of everyone else. In Economic Sophisms, Bastiat wrote, when plunder becomes a way of life for a group of men in society, you mean pirates, whether Ivy League, silver-tongued, well-heeled, or not? When plunder becomes a way of life for a group of men in a society, over the course of time, they create for themselves a legal system that authorizes it and a moral code that glorifies it. That's where we're at, you know? A legal system that authorizes it and a moral code that glorifies it. The evidence is, I suppose, that Junior Asparagus wants to go join the privateers. If I'm lucky, you know, I'll be able to join the privateers. I'll start out as an infantryman and graduate to the ranks of special forces, to the ranks of mercenary, and finally, once and for all, to the rank of privateer. Because if I'm just a mercenary, then I receive a set fee for services and generally have a formal reporting structure within the entity that hires me. But if I'm a privateer, then I can act independently with generally no compensation unless the enemy's property is captured, stolen, as it were. And I'm pretty good at capturing things and stealing things, so I ought to be rewarded handsomely for my – you see how this sort of lends itself to psychopathy, lends itself to Zimbardo's Lucifer effect. You know, and then you have a society that normalizes it, Ash conformity experiment. We have the white coats telling us it's perfectly fine, Bernaysian public relations, and so you have the Milgram experiment. No, no, it's fine. It's fine. But we're killing people. We're killing people in various ways. Maybe not even directly. You know, we're trafficking arms, you know, endorsing this, encouraging that, condoning that, whatever word you want to use, setting sophisms aside. We're killing people. No, no, they're fine. They're okay. Oh, well, the white coats, the technocrats, tell us they're fine. You know, Zbigniew Brzezinski tells us the same folks that he helped create, you know, a few stirred up Muslims. Nah, you know, what's more important? Same frenemies from yesterday. They were friends. Now they're enemies. You know, we need to get our heads screwed on straight. So, without further ado, I think we need to dive in. Mark James Corbett's interview, 1407. Mark Skidmore on the Pentagon's missing trillions. Again, James Corbett talks with Michigan State University professor Dr. Mark Skidmore regarding missing trillions. And we're going to jump in at the 7-minute mark, even though, like I, you're probably – you want to listen to all of it, and it's riveting. Obviously, we only have time for a little bit, and we're going to play an extended clip. I hope you don't mind. We'll break it up over a couple or a few segments. But it's riveting stuff, and we all should be outraged. And this conversation and the documentation should be circulated far and wide. We should all be stopping and focusing on this. It's destroying our country. It's a recipe for war, perpetual war and conflict. It's everything bad, basically. This discussion that James Corbett and Mark Skidmore are about to have for us is it's sort of emblematic of all that's wrong in America today. Anyway, without further ado, let's go ahead, please.
2015, there would be a reaccumulation. I don't think that's what's going on, although it's unclear.
As so many other things in this story are unclear. All right, so let's talk about your attempts to try to clarify this. This seems like if the Office of Inspector General is issuing these reports, then there is some public interface with this data in some way, at least through the OIG. So they would be receptive to sharing that this data in some form with researchers like yourself?
Well, initially, I had been interacting with somebody at the Office of the Inspector General. At one point, I had a phone call with two or three people, and I just was trying to get a handle on some specific questions in the report. But the people that I talked with couldn't provide answers to those. And at some point, I was referred to a communications person at the OIG who, of course, didn't know anything, specific with regard to these reports. And then at one point, all of the URLs were disabled for the OIG. And then at some point, I had done an interview on Michigan Radio regarding this question. Actually, I've now done a couple of interviews, which I think are really useful. But they just stopped responding. At one point, they responded to the producer of Michigan Radio and said, yeah, we'd be happy to provide more information. And I'll give you three examples, because you could read these reports and you could ask a number of different questions for different years. So I just picked the latest one, the largest one, $6.5 trillion, and I said, here are some examples that I don't see how you could possibly get to. And one of them was what looked to be like an $800 billion transfer from Treasury. And I'm thinking, well, $122 billion, I know how Treasury relates to the different agencies within government, whether it's a state government or national government. In a given year, the Treasury would transfer funds over to the Army in the amount that was authorized by the governing body, which would be $122 billion. Why would you need to have a transaction of $800 billion to make an adjustment, right? And they wouldn't provide any kind of specific answer to that question. Dave Lindorf, the author of this recent report by The Nation, actually went to Treasury and said, what's going on? And Treasury just didn't respond. So that's one example, right? So we don't have an answer. Another one was there's a $900 billion adjustment for accounts payable. And so one of my questions is well, how could you get accounts payable of $900 billion in transactions that we don't know about? What were those for? And again, no response. Some people have said, well, it can be internal, right? From one part of the Army to another. And so these adjustments, but why would they be unsupported? And I'll give you another example regarding that in just a moment that Norquist provided. And here's the one that I sort of narrowed down. At one point, I said, forget about my other questions. Here's a question that I think you could respond to easily in a day's time. And in the report, there were 170 adjustments that tally to $2.1 trillion. So that's a huge number, right? A trillion is 1,000 billion. 2.1 trillion is bigger than the GDP of India, and it's embodied in just 170 transactions. What in the world could that be for? Will you please just provide an addendum on your website or send me a spreadsheet so that we can all see what those adjustments were for? And they just stopped responding to any inquiry. And so I've been trying to pull on that string, because I recognize that, if you go back all these years for different parts of the DOD or HUD, that no one person is going to provide an answer to that would satisfy what happened to $21 trillion in transactions, right, that are unsupported. But you could answer that question, and I haven't gotten an answer. So that's the kind of interaction I've had with the Office of the Inspector General. I've talked with the Office of Management and Budget, I've talked with the GAO, but nobody seems to have any clarity on this. I've tried to reach out to lawmakers, and I get very little interest or response. That's the kind of thing that has happened along the way that I can't make sense of. And then there was a hearing, a C-SPAN hearing with David Norquist, who's the comptroller of the DOD. And so this was on, I think, something called MetaBunk, and Norquist was explaining, well, you know, with the $6.5 trillion, there was a lawmaker asking, how could that possibly be? This is just crazy. And Norquist says, well, you know, you have the general fund ledger, and then you have the property book ledger, and these systems don't talk to each other. And so when you have something happen on the property book, you've got to somehow reflect that in the general fund book. And so let's say you have a base closure. And he says, well, that could be in the hundreds of billions that you'd write down on your property book, and you have to reflect it over here, and that's the reason that we have 6.5. It could be hundreds of billions. And so I thought, well, I read the report. So I looked at the report, and indeed, there are about $160 billion in transfers related to property, transactions related to property. So
homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
So that's a huge number just for a change in the property book. So what it doesn't say what those were for. But even more importantly, that's only, you know, what, 2 or 3% of $6.5 trillion. There's a whole set of transactions that are unsupported that Norquist just completely ignores, and nobody asks any more questions, and that's it, and that's the explanation, right? Clearly inadequate, and, you know, is he being deceptive? Did he lie? You know, if he were in the court of law, would he have lied? Well, he didn't say something that was untrue. It was just totally incomplete, and nobody asked any questions.
He just explained maybe 2% of the problem, maybe.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'll throw the link in to that video that you mentioned so that people can watch it for themselves and make of it what they will. But keeping in mind that they are talking about $6.5 trillion specifically in that specific instance of unsupported transactions. And he gives an explanation, which, as you say, if you drill down in the numbers, might support to $160 billion or something like that in that range.
Yeah, so. It's $164 billion. So, you know, all kinds of things like this have happened along the way. And it's like, if this is just accounting gimmicks, you know, if you read the reports, I'm just going to read some of the explanations, you know, that are embodied in this report. Some failure to correct system deficiencies, incorrect data entry, omission of restated balances, erased records, budget execution adjustments, poor existing systems, complexity of operations and contracts, transactions counted multiple times that are unsupported. I want to talk about that one. Changes in the property book, which I just explained. So these are the kinds of very vague general explanations. And, you know, at this point, you know, when I heard, you know, I didn't know about the Rumsfeld thing right before 9/11. It kind of disappeared very quickly, right? But that's the last time it really got a lot of play in the media. Back in 2016, I think Reuters had a piece about the $6.5 trillion, and it just sort of showed up and disappeared. Nobody made a big deal of it. And I'm thinking, this is so huge. Why doesn't anybody want to look at this? So I just said, well, I'm willing to ask some questions. I have a background in public finance. If you look at the, you know, at the state level, the budgets of New York, California, and Texas, that's about $500-600 billion, right? And they have very complex systems. They have intergovernmental transfers to schools and municipalities. They have vast geographies. Own land and capital, and they have to make all of this work. And every year they come up. It's not to say that things don't happen at the state level or local. We know Shenanigans has happened all over, but these states produce audible reports, and they don't have adjustments of this magnitude. Typically, these unsupported adjustments or transactions that can't be accounted for are just a small fraction of authorized spending. How can it be many multiples? I don't understand.
All right. Well, I'm trying to wrap my head around this from my layman's perspective, where I have no training whatsoever in public finances or how this works. So my initial thought would be that, for example, if there are these entries, $800 billion from the Treasury, received, then if we are to take that, this is possibly actual funds that were received from the Treasury. If that were true, wouldn't that be reflected somewhere in the Treasury's books? Wouldn't we see this from another angle somewhere? Wouldn't that give credence to the idea, well, this is just made up nonsense that they're plugging into the books? Wouldn't there be some other way at seeing if this is real money?
James, none of this makes any sense. So, you know, Dave Lindorf's conclusion was, in the Nation article, is that these unsupported transactions we can't account for, are done purposefully by the DOD in order to obfuscate. And so it's so vague and unclear, nobody asks any questions, and they're able to negotiate for increased spending amounts every year. That's his conclusion. And I don't agree with that conclusion. I don't know how you could possibly conclude that. If Treasury doesn't respond to a question, about, well, was this an actual transfer? Then Treasury, how do you know that that wasn't a real transaction that occurred, that money actually flowed in some way? I don't know. Similarly, if the OIG doesn't provide any information about these 170 adjustments, why would the Army make those numbers up, right? Or how could it be that these they're just erroneous transactions, you know, that there's system problems in those huge amounts, just 170 transactions worth of $2.1 trillion. So the DOD's explanations of, well, we have inadequate systems and we're basically incompetent, we can't fix it over two decades, does not make sense to me.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Here are some from Amazon. By Christine, great for heart palpitations. By Anne, before I started using this product, every afternoon, my ankles and my hands would be swollen. That doesn't happen anymore. So if that part of their advertising is true, I have to assume that the rest of it is also. Not to mention that when I had my yearly blood test, only a few weeks after beginning to use this product, my cholesterol had dropped over 30 points. I'm going to continue to take it. By Croc, I love this product. It really works. By Brad, works great. Thank you. Tell us your story. Get your Extendivite today. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Do you worry a lot? If you're forgetful, nervous, moody, or overwhelmed, chances are you're not protecting yourself from the ravaging effects of stress and anxiety. No matter the cause, ongoing stress and elevated levels of the stress hormone cortisol can rob your memory, your health, your quality of life, and your future. Now you can combat the effects of stress and anxiety while improving your memory and recall at the same time with the dietary supplement Calm and Clever. Studies show that the ingredients in Calm and Clever reduce cortisol by as much as 30% in as little as 1 to 2 weeks and increase your ability to recall facts, names, and numbers in 4 to 12 weeks. Calm and Clever was created by scientist Kurt Hendricks, a principal investigator in 2 NIH-funded studies on Alzheimer's disease. Try Calm and Clever for 2 months. You'll feel the difference. Call 1-800-758-8746 or go to calmandclever.com.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Station. Beyond the suns that guard this roost, beyond your flowers of flaming truth, beyond your latest ad campaigns. An old man sits collecting stamps in a room all filled with Chinese lamps. He saves what others throw away. He says that he'll be rich someday.
Bottom of the, what is it, second hour already? This Friday, December 21st, 2018. And organized crime has gone mainstream. You know, it has an Ivy League veneer. It's gone mainstream. And we're listening to James Corbett and Mark Skidmore discuss the Pentagon's missing trillions. What a great place to squirrel away trillions, just to sort of flush them down the memory hole. Truman lamented, Eisenhower warned, JFK was assassinated by the selfsame interests. Truthout has an interesting article published last year, Mark Carlin, the title, Former CIA Intelligence Analyst Says Whistleblowers Are Vital to a Transparent Democracy. Don't like the word transparent, don't like the word democracy. Not necessarily a fan of the word whistleblower, but anyway. Mark Carlin interviews Melvin Goodman. That's an interesting conversation. And, you know, I've talked about Melvin Goodman in the past. Anyway, from that article, here is the relevant excerpt. The question, what was the original intent of Harry Truman in creating the CIA? What other areas has it evolved into? Example, clandestine activities, etc. You know, you have guys like, not Victor Marchetti. Who was it? Not Philip Agee. Man, it's right on the tip of my brain. Who said, you know, there are two agencies. There is the intelligence service, and then there's the DO. The DO. Anyway, continuing, the article states, President Harry Truman wanted an intelligence agency to collect intelligence and conduct intelligence analysis for the White House. But little did he know, Skull and Bones had other plans. And the national security bureaucracy, he didn't want a cloak and dagger, quote unquote, agency, and was highly critical of the efforts of Presidents Dwight Eisenhower and John Kennedy to incorporate covert action in Iran. Again, though, was it Kennedy? Was it Eisenhower? You know, it was like Ralph McGahee said, the president's foreign policy advisors, Philip Drew, administrator. Highly critical of efforts of President Dwight Eisenhower and John Kennedy to incorporate covert action in Iran, the Congo, and Cuba. You know, I've talked about how you know, it's essentially a publicly disclosed, well-known fact of history that Averill Harriman was running McGeorge Bundy in Vietnam during the Kennedy administration. So what was JFK doing in Vietnam, for example? What was going on in Cuba? Operation Zapata, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, Truman didn't want a cloak and dagger agency. He was highly critical of efforts by Eisenhower and Kennedy to incorporate covert action in Iran. That's misleading, though, obviously, is what I'm trying to say. Covert action in Iran, the Congo, and Cuba to conduct regime change and political assassination. Before he died, Truman said that if I knew then what I know now, I wouldn't have created the CIA. And then the article goes on, virtually every president since Truman has endorsed a covert action that has not advanced the strategic interests of the United States. But again, this is disingenuous. You have to reflect back on Ralph McGahee, 25-year career CIA veteran, intelligence, you know, career intelligence medal recipient, who told us, you know, after his personal experience, the CIA is not now, nor has it ever been, an the Central Intelligence Agency. It is the covert action arm of the president's foreign policy advisors. That's where it is, right there. Who are the foreign policy advisors? Again, Averill Harriman, steering McGeorge Bundy, pretty much single-handedly. Kennedy's frustrated. What's going on here? You know? So it is the covert action arm of the president's foreign policy advisors. Think about that. Think about that, because we get the other impression. It's important not to go away from that too fast. We get the other impression, you know? And when you understand the reality and, I mean, the timing of Ralph McGahee's remarks to this effect in Deadly Deceits, the timing and his, you know, the timing of his career and his experience and his witnessing of this. The CIA is not now, nor has it ever been, a central intelligence agency. It is the covert action arm of the president's foreign policy advisors. When you understand that, who and what George Bush was, Herbert Walker, that is, and represented, takes on a whole different light and focus. The CIA is the covert action arm of the president's foreign policy advisors. In that capacity, it overthrows or supports foreign governments while reporting intelligence, justifying those activities. It shapes its intelligence, even in such critical areas as Soviet nuclear weapon capability, to support presidential policy. But it's not presidential policy, is it? Again, that's misleading. Disinformation is a large part of its covert action responsibility, and the American people are the primary target audience of its lies. Why? Because we have to find ways to make all of this seem justifiable. And eventually, you get to a point where it's need to know and you don't need to know. Mark Carlin's article mentions virtually every president since Truman has endorsed a covert action that has not advanced the strategic interests of the United States. I can't help but think of Bill Hicks and that little deal that he did, you know, the Kennedy assassination. Every president since the CIA was created out of the ashes of the Phoenix of the OSS, the Phoenix continually rising. You know, Bill Hicks used to do that routine about, you know, the presidents after JFK, you know, they get elected, so they think, and then they go into that room in the White House no one knows about and view the Kennedy assassination, but it's not the Zapruder footage. It's from a different vantage point. And then the film clips off, the lights come on, and, you know, any questions? Nope. Just what do we do next? Ralph McGahee, the CIA is not a central intelligence agency. It is the covert action arm of the president's foreign policy advisors. You know, history tells us that, yes, Virginia, there is a conspiracy. So we're listening to James Corbett's interview 1407 with Mark Skidmore, Michigan State University professor, Dr. Mark Skidmore, who, as you heard, has a background in public finance. And, you know, again, he's worked with Catherine Austin Fitz, who also has a background in public finance, obviously, if you know anything about her. And, I mean, that's an understatement in her case, certainly. We all know and have known for years. I mean, subject matter expert. And so they're diving into these trillions of dollars that are unaccounted for just in the Pentagon. And we just keep falling forward. We keep failing and falling forward in this narrative. A problem that you would think the right action would correct, not only does it not get corrected, but for some strange reason, we go in the opposite direction of correcting the wrongs. We're going to institute a system that, you know, as mom used to put it, two wrongs make a right. Ain't going to happen. So I'm reminded of the excerpt that I mentioned from Ralph Epperson's Unseen Hand on exactly, you know, how you do this, how you just keep enslaving the people and imprisoning the people through this process, this Machiavellian dialectical conflict model. And here we are with the latest example. I think I'll refrain from mentioning that, and we'll just get back to the clip in the remaining minutes here. Anyway, without further ado, interview 1407, James Corbett, Mark Skidmore on the Pentagon's missing trillions. Go ahead, please.
But it doesn't make sense to me that, well, they do this on purpose to obfuscate so that they can somehow negotiate for more funding. You know, to me, that would work in the opposite direction. If I were a lawmaker, I would say, get your books fixed, and then we'll talk about what you need. But that never seems to happen. And so then the other alternative is the one that Catherine, based on her experience in HUD, has emphasized. It's like, this could really be trillions of dollars flowing in and out for who knows what purpose. And so in the case of money flowing in, we have this example of $800 billion that appears to be a transfer from Treasury. So then you have to come back and say, well, what's happening within Treasury? And say, well, if you assume that the Treasury is operating in full transparency, then that's impossible. It can't work, right?
Yeah. Well, that goes down to the heart of I know nothing about this. How if the Department of the Army or whatever is supposed to get $122 billion, how does that transaction take place? The Treasury cuts a check for $122 billion and the Army goes and cashes it? I mean, how does that actually happen?
You know, I'm not sure exactly how that would happen, but usually there is a regular transfer of funds from Treasury to whatever, you know, if it's a state government's Treasury to various agencies or the national government. And so it would be, over the course of a year, a transfer of $122 billion of authorized spending, and there wouldn't be any more transactions. So I don't understand, even if it's erroneous problems within the Army, why you would have a transaction of $800 billion that somehow is connected to Treasury. And so then you have to come back. And that's where, you know, I don't think anybody wants to look. So what if Treasury has two sets of books, right? And I don't know that. I can't know that, right? But we do know, and this is one thing that I really think is important for us all to understand. As the DOD was going through its audit this year, the Federal Accounting Standards Advisory Board made this announcement that, you know, we have this problem. If we actually report on spent expenditures, there might be some issues of national security which would emerge. And so one option, and this has been the option that has been taken in the past, is that you would redact certain expenditure items and would just be blacked out, right? But they said, well, we're not going to recommend that. What we're going to recommend is this, and this is astounding. This is a huge change. It's so important. They said, we're going to allow a certain group of people within government, a small group of people, whoever they are, to determine what a national security issue is, and those same people will then be allowed to restate budgets and actually move funds from activity A over to activity B. It affects a bottom line. And so now, you know, so that was a recommendation, and every single department within government, except for the OIG, did not like this solution. But everybody said, even HUD said, yeah, this is a great idea. That way we can just, you know, present to the public a budget that looks good. But it's fake. And we have no idea how much money was moved around, right? And they will never tell us.
Well, repeat that. That was a recommendation that was made that was adopted and is now the law of the land?
It was adopted on October 4th, just in time for the summary results of the DOD audit. So they failed the audit, but they were able to use this ruling in their reporting, right? So a reporter was asking me, well, what do you think of the audit results, et cetera? And I just said, Well, with this new rule where you have a fake book, financial statements that is presented to the public, and then the real one, which remains hidden only for a few people to see, why would I waste my time looking at this? I have no idea if this is legitimate or not, or reflects any kind of real spending. I don't know.
And that applies to every department of the federal government?
Yeah.
That's, I mean, that right it's there not, is kind of the story of the millennium, but yeah, apparently zero interest from anyone. That's astounding. They are now openly admitting that there are now, fake books. You can't rely on any of this information.
Yeah. But we'll continue to pretend that it's legitimate.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I think we have to do everything we can to try to reverse this, but I don't see anybody standing up and saying, you know what, this is wrong, right?
It's insanity. This is utter insanity on every level, that the public that this isn't the number one story for the American public at this point. It's just, it's unfathomable.
So coming back to Treasury, right? So maybe they had two sets of books all along. I don't know. Right. So we've just legitimized, we've just formalized with this new ruling and the acceptance of this two sets of books story. It was so non-transparent before, but at least the law was in the favor of citizens and taxpayers. And now we don't have any recourse. We can just point to this. Well, this ruling says we can restate things if it's a national security issue. And then, well, what defines a national security issue?
And who gets to define it? Yeah.
And who, it's not clear to me who gets to define it. So this is a huge issue. I'm at a loss. I'm like,
our conversation keeps coming back to that phrase of yours. Well, we don't know for sure, or I can't say for sure. What can you say for sure? What do we know about this problem?
That's a good question, James. I've thought a lot about this, and there's something authentic happening at the OIG when they produce these reports. They're saying, you know what, we're taking a smattering of what's happening at Defense or HUD, and we're finding some huge adjustments that transactions that can't be supported. And by the way, this is kind of interesting, is the OIG just provides a sort of summary overall statement. In these reports, there are also trillions of dollars that were supported. And so Dave Lindorf was asking the OIG, well, what does that mean when there are trillions of supported adjustments? And the OIG just said, well, we don't actually go in and look in detail. What we do is say, well, were those transactions approved by the authorized personnel? So in addition to all of these transactions that were not approved by authorized personnel, we have additional trillions of quote-unquote supported adjustments, but the OIG hasn't actually gone in and looked in detail. They've just said, well, somebody at a high level said this was okay, right? So, I've tried to be consistent in my assessment because I'm not an insider. I happen to know something about public budgeting. I seem to be naive enough to ask these kinds of questions and say, I don't know. I want to know, how can you get $2.1 trillion from just 170 transactions on a $122 billion budget? It makes no sense to me, right? And so, does it make sense that these systems are so archaic? Well, no. And by the way, the systems were designed primarily by Lockheed, right? So we have this conflict of interest. And about 2 years ago, that portion of Lockheed's business, these financial systems that they create and manage, was spun off to another entity. So, that doesn't make sense.
Tell us a little bit about that story. So the financial systems that the Pentagon are using were supplied by Lockheed Martin?
Yeah, for many years. And not just that, they provided the systems for HUD as well. Catherine Austin Fitz tells a story when she was Assistant Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, how she wanted to get more transaction level information about the assets that were, you know, in the portfolio that she managed, and she was unable to get them. They said, well, you don't have access to that. And so how can one make, you know, decisions if you don't have access? So that's a complex issue. And so that was spun off a couple of years ago to a separate company.
Which raises the question about the old canard that has been floated around since this issue first arose, that, oh, it's the legacy systems, they don't talk to each other. Literally now for 2 decades they've been using this excuse. And I don't know, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but I've seen large numbers being thrown around in defense appropriation budgets for years and years. We need another however many tens of millions in order to update the systems and get them talking to each other. We need another 100 million for this audit. How much did the audit cost? Was it 900 million? Am I getting that?
I don't remember off the top of my head. I'd have to look, but it was many, you know, many tens or hundreds of millions. So a lot of money
for a failed audit, which the Pentagon thinks it should get credit for at least going through that process.
For having tried to do it, they felt like that was a real accomplishment. The system's not talking to each other. I mean, think about state government, for example. They will make some sort of property-related investment to a municipality through a grant to buy, say, a fire truck. And so the city will then purchase a fire truck with that funding, and then the local auditor will verify that transaction was made in the right amount, and they'll have a summary report. They'll submit that usually in paper, maybe electronically, to the state government. And the state government auditor will say, yes, indeed, you know, City X spent the money in the way it was supposed to. The systems don't talk to each other. They just are able to, you know, verify it through appropriate methods. And so I know that the Army, for example, has many bases all over the world, and each base has to be managed. So it is complex, but I think it's possible to do this without many trillions of dollars in adjustments.
I know, again, we can't say for certain, but it seems fairly likely at this point. I think we can say with great certainty that the Pentagon is obviously not interested in solving this problem. For whatever reason, I mean.
Well, and I would go further. I would say that lawmakers are not interested in solving this problem. Treasury is not interested in solving this problem. Dave Lindorf's article came out, and you know, I don't necessarily agree with his conclusions, but it legitimized the fact that $21 trillion is indeed missing. There are transactions that can't be accounted for. I wonder, has anybody started an investigation? Are we going to have any hearings under oath to find out what's going on with some of the, you know, really going in and looking at specific transactions? And if there's some layer of inappropriate activity, then somebody should be held accountable. Somebody should probably go to prison, right? We're talking about gross, you know, ethical violations, right?
And yeah. Well, again, this couldn't possibly come down to one person. I mean, this has to involve multiple people at multiple levels. Again, it's insanity. It's utterly I cannot process how this could be going on and not be one of the most pressing national security concerns in and of itself. Clearly, if we're talking of tens of millions of dollars, tens of trillions of dollars that can't be accounted for. We don't know what it means. And no one is talking about it. There is no congressman or senator that's taking this up as a crusade. It's not in the news. Again,
and part of it is that the numbers are so huge, it just sort of flies away, right?
I don't know about you, but that's astonishing. That's it for the second hour. Third hour coming up. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.